Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I mean, I remember I was always like the shy kid, and she would break me out of my shell. Whenever she was with me, I would be more outgoing, and after she disappeared, I just kind of sunk back into my shell, and I always kind of wondered, like, even as a kid, like, if Aunt Kathy wasn't gone, like, would I have more friends? Would I have grown up with more people to hang out with? And like, meeting people throughout my life, like, my dad dated someone for a few years when we were growing up, that I really liked her, and I remember saying to my dad, like, you know, Aunt Kathy would have really liked her. My grandfather passing away, that was the hardest thing about my grandfather passing away, not me, but him not knowing that he would never know what happened.
I was very thankful that our agency, my agency, allowed me to work on it full time. This was never a missing person case. Yeah, technically it is a missing person. This was a homicide. That's how we looked at it. We looked at it as a homicide. We did everything we would do in a homicide investigation. Although technically, you know, it's a missing person, but we all know what it is. It's a homicide.
Forty-eight-year-old Kathleen Moon was last seen at her home in the Gulf Mills section of Upper Marion Township, Pennsylvania, on the evening of December 3rd, 1999. Kathleen had intended on spending the weekend in Levittown, Pennsylvania, just about a 40-minute drive from her home. At this point in her life, Kathleen was living with her husband, Thomas Moon. After over 20 years of marriage, the two had become estranged, and the pair had been openly seeing other people. But they still remained living under one roof. Kathleen had spent most weekends with her boyfriend in Levittown, and this weekend in early December was no different. Her husband claims that she left the house around 9 p.m. that evening, but she never made it to her destination, and her car was later found abandoned. For the past 19 years, the police have had one suspect in mind, but their evidence is circumstantial. What they're certain of, though, is that Kathleen didn't just walk away from her life. They believe that Kathleen was murdered. They just need that key piece of evidence to bring her killer to justice. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 153 of The Vanished, Kathleen Moon's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Over the last few years of covering missing persons cases, I've been presented with an array of scenarios. Sometimes we are bestowed with little to no information as to what happened to a person. At best, the facts will be few and far between. In other cases, we have an abundance of information, locations, times, even evidence pointing authorities in the direction of answers. But unfortunately, still lacking an essential detail that will put us on the path to closure. The latter is the exact situation that the family and friends of Kathleen Moon are in. On December 3rd, 1999, Kathleen had plans to go spend the weekend with her boyfriend in Levittown. However, at first she was thinking about canceling her weekend away. She wanted to get a head start on wrapping Christmas presents. But ultimately, she decided to go visit her boyfriend, who had convinced her to just bring the gifts with her and they could wrap them together. Kathleen would never make it to Levittown on December 3rd. By December 5th, Kathleen's boyfriend, Robert Linder, decided to call Tom to make sure she was all right. The pair had never spoken before this moment, but given the fact that Robert was concerned about Kathleen, he decided to swallow any uncomfortableness that may come from this interaction and call. According to Tom, Kathleen had left around 9 p.m. on the 3rd, and he assumed that she was at Linder's home that weekend. After the two men spoke, Tom contacted the police to report Kathleen missing. 10 days after Kathleen was last seen alive, her SUV was found abandoned in a KFC parking lot in Tullytown, Pennsylvania. This was just minutes from her boyfriend's home. According to employees at the restaurant, the car had been there since at least December 5th. Upon further examination of the vehicle, authorities noted that inside the SUV were Kathleen's glasses, medicine, and purse. However, her wallet and the Christmas gifts she had allegedly been traveling with were gone. Later, the police spent hours going over video surveillance from the nearby Pennsylvania Turnpike. They spotted Kathleen's SUV leaving the turnpike at the Bristol exit around 9:54 a.m. on December 4th, the day after her husband said she had left. When they took a closer look, they saw what they believed to be a blonde woman leaning against the passenger side window, and only the arm of the driver can be made out clearly. To get a better idea of what may have happened to Kathleen, we need to go back and examine the things that were going on in her life in the time leading up to her disappearance. These are the things that the police believe paint a clear picture of one person who had a motive to harm Kathleen. Someone who would benefit from her just disappearing. Kathleen was very close with her family. They all made a point to be part of each other's lives. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Kathleen's brother Frank and his daughter Kathy for this episode. Here's Frank talking about his beloved sister, Kathleen.
My sister, she was my only sibling. So, well, we were very close growing up, even though she was 6 years older than I was. When she finally married Tom Moon, they bought a house up in Gulf Mills, and they lived there. My sister Kathy couldn't have children, so we stayed very close, and when I got married and had children, of course, my two daughters, Kathleen, who's named after my sister Kathy, and Amy, were very close with her, and she treated them like their own daughters. And even though we still lived in Wilmington, she lived in Gulf Mills up by Ardmore, we would still go up there every weekend and visit and swim at their pool, or she would come down. And typically, we would go up there maybe like on a Saturday and visit with her, go swimming in the summer season. Then when my mom passed away, she would come down every weekend and spend Sundays and Mondays with my father because he lived alone. So, which he lived maybe about 10 miles from us at the time. So we would all meet at my dad's house on Sunday nights, and that went on for a long time. She was a great person. She was my confidant. I mean, for years. I mean, she was the person I always went to with when I had issues and stuff, the person I would talk to.
After Kathleen and Tom got married, Tom went to school for dentistry, and after graduating, he opened up his own practice in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. Kathleen worked as an x-ray tech at a local hospital in Gulf Mills. But about a year before her disappearance, she was laid off. This is when she began working at Tom's office. Throughout my research on this case, it was apparent that Tom and Kathleen began to drift apart. At some point, Kathleen went to consult with a divorce attorney. I was curious if those close to Kathleen knew what was going on within her relationship with Tom.
I knew they weren't happy. She never really mentioned divorce to me, but I knew she wasn't happy with Tom. That's really all I knew. She mentioned she had a friend. This is the gentleman I lived at in Bristol, PA. She really didn't elaborate on exactly what was going on with him to me.
Kathleen's father stated to the Associated Press in 2002 that a week before Kathleen went missing, Tom got down on his hands and knees and begged her not to go through with her plans because it would bankrupt him. On December 3rd, 1999, Kathleen worked a shift at Tom's dental practice, then made her way back home. After some debate, she decided to go to Levittown for the weekend to see her boyfriend, Robert Linder. But Kathleen would never make it there. While speaking with Frank and his daughter Kathy, I wondered about the last time they had spoken to Kathleen.
I probably spoke to her, I can't remember exactly. We had a lot of phone calls back and forth, but it was probably right before she was supposed to come down that Sunday. I know it was coming up on Christmas, and we probably talked about gifts for Kathy and Amy, Christmas gifts, and probably what time she would be down that day. I don't remember exact time or exactly what we talked about, though.
According to Tom, Kathleen had left their home in Gulf Mills around 9 p.m. to head to Robert Linder's home in Levittown. Once it was apparent that Kathleen was missing, police did their best to track her whereabouts. Eventually, they found that her car had been spotted on the Pennsylvania Turnpike at 9:54 a.m. on December 4th. Kathleen's brother has seen the picture that the surveillance cameras were able to capture. What can be seen in it, according to him, is a Ford Explorer with a Caucasian male driving and what appears to be a blonde-haired individual slumped over on the passenger side of the vehicle.
It looked like her vehicle, and it looked like the person driving it. There was at least a person on the driver's side. All I remember is seeing the hand across the top of the steering wheel like that, whoever was driving it. Just looked like her vehicle. There wasn't a license plate that I could identify with, but sure, it was a Ford Explorer and all. There was something there, but it was so grainy that somebody almost had to point that out to you to look for that. Because when I remember when I first looked at that picture, I was looking at the arm, and first thing I was looking at was, if I remember correctly, there was a short sleeve, and there was just like you see the skin of the arm, and it was a Caucasian male's arm, what it looked like to me.
Kathleen had intended on visiting her brother Frank and his family on Sunday. However, they noticed that Kathleen had not called or shown up like she said she was going to do. For Kathleen, this was something that was highly unusual.
The Sunday evening, I guess, she was always very punctual about coming out at a certain time, and she didn't come. We didn't hear from her. I think it was probably, we were waiting for probably right around 10 or 11 o'clock that night. We really started to assume something was wrong.
I remember playing outside, waiting for her to arrive, kept looking up the street. So I knew my sister, I was only 10, but I remember my sister having a fight with her the week before. And my aunt yelled at her. Of course, she was 7. She was being bad, doing something. And she was waiting for her to come because she wanted to talk to her and say she was sorry for being bad the week before. Her car just never made that turn around the corner.
I was curious to know if Frank ever reached out to Tom in regards to Kathleen's whereabouts.
Did we call that night?
I'm sure we did.
Yeah. We called up the house. Did we talk? I think Tom answered and said she left already.
He said she left Friday night and she went to wrap gifts at Linder's house. And of course, she never showed up there. So that's when I think she was reported missing officially on the 3rd. She disappeared the last night she was seen was Friday, December 3rd.
After filing a missing persons report, Frank and Tom went to search for Kathleen and her car.
My dad took a ride through looking for the car with Tom, and they didn't find it.
Yeah, at the time, I wasn't sure what happened, and I really didn't suspect Tom. All I know is that she was missing. And somewhere along there, I found out where this rich lender lived. And so I said, Tom, we've got to do something. And so Tom was basically, well, she'll turn up or something like that. Well, Tom, I'm going to go look for her. Where does this guy live? And somehow I found out where he lived. It was in the Bristol, PA area, Levittown. And we rode around for probably 2 hours up and down neighborhood streets, just looking for a car one night. And then I went and took him home. Then I came home.
Tom's reaction to his wife's disappearance seems odd. He showed little to no concern, but on the other side of the coin, there was also Robert Linder. And Kathleen's car was found just minutes from his residence. Police were able to rule Linder out as a suspect early on in the investigation based on a few things.
He passed lie detector tests.
Yeah.
So that's why they ruled him out. And he's the one that called Tom concerned about her not showing up. And Tom never seemed concerned, so that was part of the reason that they eliminated him.
Some news reports have stated that there were air fresheners in Kathleen's car, and that this was unlike her, However, the family refutes that report. Due to the fact that Kathleen was a smoker, she always kept air fresheners in her vehicle. However, when her car was eventually located in the KFC parking lot on December 13th, investigators discovered something that made them believe that this wasn't just a missing person, but a homicide. To discuss this, we were able to get in touch with retired detective Rick Gaiman. He's an investigator who spent much of his career working on Kathleen's case. Have you ever been watching a crime show where a detective talks about a case, the one they wanted to solve before they retired? This is the case that Detective Gaiman wanted so desperately to solve. He began working the case just 10 days into the investigation. Even though Detective Gaiman retired several years ago and has relocated to another area of the country, I was able to track him down and he was eager to help with this episode because he still wants to see justice for Kathleen. This is what he had to say about the car.
And that's what the family told us also, that she, although she was a smoker and the car always smelled of smoke, and it was normally messy, but she would clean it up every weekend. She'd get it washed and cleaned up when she was visiting her niece, Kathy, and her brother in Delaware. And when we found the vehicle, or the vehicle was located, it was pretty clean. It was very immaculate. Like it had been detailed on the inside, and there were numerous air fresheners found in it. We did have two cadaver dogs. One was a FEMA dog, a cadaver dog, you know, that they're the ones that go looking for the missing persons or bodies in natural disasters or disasters. And then we also had a Philadelphia Police Department cadaver dog. They both indicated the presence of a cadaver was in the car. We reviewed the Valley Forge and the Mid-County along with the Bristol exits. And some of those, Mid-County, they might have 15 lanes. So we reviewed all those videotapes. It was just hundreds and hundreds of hours. And we found one with definitely the car coming through the Bristol exit of the toll booth. It appears, now, remember, this was almost 20 years ago, so the technology isn't as good as it is now, and it was on a videotape, and it appears to be there was a body leaning against the passenger side door.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanish to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. From an investigator's standpoint, I wanted to know how Detective Gaiman felt about Robert Linder as a potential suspect in this case.
Bobby Linder, or Robert Linder is his name. First of all, he was the only one, other than until Frank got involved, that expressed any concern about the whereabouts of Kathy. He told us, and this was confirmed by Kathy's husband, Thomas Moan, that he called the house 45 times and Thomas did not answer the phone because he just knew it wasn't for him, was his answer. When we started doing his alibi investigation, we actually tightened up his alibi better than what he told us. I don't know if that makes sense to you. He told us where he had been for, like, you know, for these, you know, 8 hours. And there might have been a little separation there where he didn't remember where he was, but we were able to track it down through receipts, video, other videotapes, witness testimony from people who knew him and didn't know him. Like he entered a convenience store and they remembered him being in there. Well, Linder did not remember that at the time. And he also successfully passed 2 lie detector tests. 2 polygraphs. We were convinced pretty early that he was not involved in this whatsoever. Other than the family, he was the only one expressing any concern about her whereabouts. And he was genuine. I mean, I've talked to him numerous times in person. We could tell that he was being honest and he was really a caring person for her, really cared for her.
Detective Gaiman told me more about their knowledge of Kathleen's intentions to divorce Tom.
We first learned of that from actually an employee of Tom Moan, who was a friend of Kathy's. And she told us that in very early in the investigation that Kathy had confided in her that she had consulted an attorney regarding a divorce, and that the attorney had explained to her, since Kathy had put Tom, continued to work while Tom went to dental school, that she would be probably entitled to, and I believe it was like, I don't know, 65% of the business and a sizable monthly alimony. I believe the number was somewhere around $4,000 a month. She also told that to Frank Maycott's first wife. She was aware of it also with the same numbers. And we actually spoke to the attorney back in early 2000 who confirmed the conversation.
Detective Gaiman also told me about speaking face to face with Tom in regards to Kathleen's disappearance.
I got involved in a case on the 13th of December, 1999. And we contacted Moan for the purpose of an interview. He said that he'd call us right back to help schedule it. And right away, within 10 minutes, we received a phone call from his attorney, which is not unusual. You know, people have attorneys. But I think that he knew this was coming. Things were starting to point at him because he had a criminal attorney right away. Our very first interview was actually it was about 2 hours, and it was mainly about background and personal appearances and characteristics and financial information. And during that time, Tom, he made no mention at all of the marital discord that they had. And he told us that she was still seriously drinking, even to the point where he's saying that she was drinking flavored vodka to hide the smell of the alcohol in her breath. Well, of course, you know, as we interview all her friends in the AA, we find out that that's not true. She hadn't been drinking for a while. Right after that, and after we did the the search warrant on the home, Moan just stopped, refused to talk to us. And he never spoke to any of the investigators again.
Why would Tom state to investigators that Kathleen had been drinking heavily around the time of her disappearance? Was he trying to use her past as a slight against her? A way to blame her for her own disappearance? Of course, this is just a theory, and we can't truly be sure why he would bring this up. Like Detective Gaiman previously stated, Tom has refused to speak with investigators since the early stages of the investigation into Kathleen's disappearance. However, after numerous attempts, we were able to speak with Tom. We contacted Tom to give him a chance to comment on Kathleen's case, and this is what he had to say.
Well, I don't think any new information has come up.
We asked him what it's been like for him all of these years, not knowing what happened to his wife.
Well, it's a statement of the obvious, and it's a tragedy, and I don't think I can really elaborate on that further.
Finally, we asked Tom if there was anything else he wanted to add about his wife or her disappearance.
Not at this time. I just have no new information.
It appears that still, after all this time, Tom has remained tight-lipped when he's questioned about Kathleen's disappearance. While we all deal with tragedy differently, his response, or lack thereof, does seem odd. During my conversation with Detective Gaiman, I did ask if any evidence was found in the Moon residence that would shed light on what happened to Kathleen before she disappeared.
We did remove a piece of drywall with some blood samples on it, and when it was tested, we found out it was not human blood. He had a shed, and it was full with tools, shovels, and picks. And we examined those tools and took samples of the dirt. Unfortunately, the dirt is common pretty much all up and down the East Coast. There was nothing specific about it. Now, if we had some other dirt to match to it, or to compare it to, then we would have, you know, had something there, but they really didn't amount to anything.
Since no damning physical evidence was located, I inquired about the actual search for Kathleen's body.
We had searched areas that we believed, using pretty much good guesses about where someone would hide a body. Now, we did have a little bit of a timeline, so we didn't really have to go that far away from where the car was found, or where we know that she came through the toll booth, and then when the car was actually first spotted. So we knew that we didn't have to go that far. So we looked in places that the Bucks County Police Department and the District Attorney's Office, they helped us with some locations, because this was all in a different county. I don't know if you're aware of that. Well, yeah, Kathy lived in Montgomery County, and this was in Bucks County. And we also received three phone calls from people. Two are self-acclaimed psychics, and one was just from a woman who lived in New Jersey, of all places. And she said, look, I don't know anything about this case other than what I've seen on the news, but I had a dream. And she described a place that she has never been to, and she was right on spot on, and we searched that area, and obviously nothing happened. We had a woman from a psychic from Massachusetts who called us, and she was very specific on a location that she had seen her, and she came down. She traveled from Massachusetts, met with us, took us there, and we searched the area where she thought that Kathy would be found. And of course, it didn't happen. And then we had another phone call from another psychic who told us that Kathy was alive and well and living in Los Angeles. So that's how we did some of our searches, through either phone calls or tips that we had gotten. We had received tips that somebody believed they had seen Tom Moan near some railroad tracks near the Delaware River, and he met us with that location, and we searched that with dog canines and actually dug dug up places and to no avail. It is built up, and between that Highway 13 and the river, there are some places that are pretty remote. We were actually pretty surprised to see that.
With searches turning up no sign of Kathleen, it's difficult to prosecute anyone without a smoking gun. Rick Gaiman has always believed that there is only one obvious suspect in this case.
There's only ever been one suspect, and that's Thomas Mount. And I realized that his not cooperating with the police is not a crime, but it seems a little suspect to me. If my wife was missing, I think I'd be, I know I would be a lot more concerned than he has ever shown. But there is no hard evidence, physical evidence, pushing a conclusion to this case towards Thomas Moan or anybody else. But the investigators believe that we have a very good circumstantial evidence case. We believe that we could probably get a conviction, but we don't make those decisions. That's the district attorney's office makes the decisions, and understandably they're a little leery about pursuing murder charges when you don't have a body. Although it's been done numerous times throughout the country, but I think the most important thing that your listeners, I hope they realize, is that one, that the boyfriend, Bobby Linder, was cleared very early in the investigation. And again, he was one of the few people expressed any concern about Kathy and her whereabouts. And that all these circumstantial evidence, it only points to one person, and that's Thomas Moan.
It's evident that anyone who has become involved in this case has suspected Tom is the culprit. Kathleen's family discussed what they remember from Tom's reaction after Kathleen went missing.
I don't think he ever cooperated.
You got an attorney right away, I do believe.
There's an old newspaper article. It's not out anymore, but it's got his picture and he's holding his hand up like he doesn't want pictures being taken in it. The big headline, I'm sure we have it somewhere, says, "I did not murder my wife," Mainline Dennis says.
Yeah, after that, I called him one time, probably a month or two after this all happened, when I realized I knew he had something to do with it. And it was just this conversation that went south real quick. I just remember hollering at him and stuff. And he just listened to me. Then he barely said anything. I don't remember even what he said. And then he hung up. And that's the last time we ever corresponded.
Frank and his family still run into Tom from time to time. In fact, he was their dentist for some time after Kathleen went missing.
Because he was our dentist, and we went back once or twice after she disappeared for dentist appointments before we got a new dentist. Because he was giving us, I'm assuming, not free, but very discounted dental care.
Yeah, we still really didn't think anything to do with it for a long time, you know, and it really started to set in, I think, when we stopped going up there.
When I had my initial meeting with the detective when I was 10 years old, they were asking me all these questions, like, what do you think of your uncle? Like, what do you think he had anything to do with this? And as a kid, I just, no, of course not. Like, he's great. And then looking back, I remember all the weird stuff. Like, he would make you lick his face when you were leaving. It was called a Kirk kiss. That was his dog's name. And he would yell at us for kid stuff, you know, like he didn't like kids. Just the weird stuff sticks out.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. One question that came up was how someone could dump her car in the KFC parking lot and get back home. One theory is that Kathleen's car was dropped off at the KFC because it was within close proximity to a train station. Whoever left the vehicle there could have simply hopped on a train to flee the area.
I remember the only thing the police worked on at the time, that KFC was close to a train station, and they investigated that he could have dropped the car off there for the sake of getting on a train. And their house in Gulf Mills was right by a little mini train station. He could have taken a train back to Gulf Mills and gotten off the train there. But the police did look at that. That was stuff that the initial detective, Rick Gaiman, was working on.
While I was researching this case, one thing really stood out to me. Tom said Kathy left in her vehicle with those Christmas presents. And when her car was found, the presents weren't inside. The thing is, though, Tom later brought those presents to her family. So if she left with those presents in her car and was never seen again, how did Tom have them?
That was part of the thing where the police started to suspect Tom, because he essentially told them that she left with the gifts, but he brought them to us a few weeks later and we turned them into evidence. I remember Jaji, my grandfather, being upset because he brought them, and he was upset that he brought them, and that Jaji automatically assumed, well, he must know she's never coming back. And that was the only thing I remember about that visit, was that he brought the gifts and they were turned into the police because he brought them and just didn't seem concerned. And
I asked Detective Gaiman what he thought about the presents.
Yeah, I mean, that was what we really thought was going to be the key, that if you believe Linder, and there was no reason not to, that he had talked to Kathy, and Kathy had elected to go up and spend a weekend with him like she had been doing for the last, 8 or 9, 10 months. And even to the point where she sends an email to Kathy, her niece, at 7:30 that evening, and says, you know, I'll see you over the weekend. I'm going to an adult sleepover. So we're assuming that, you know, she, after this phone call to Linda and the email at 7:30 on December 3rd, that she met her demise then, after that. Then the theory is that the gifts are in the car. She's murdered, but gifts have to come out of the car so she can be transported.
Frank mentioned to me that Rick Gaiman always kept the memory of Kathleen in the forefront of his mind.
The police were always very sincere about their dedication to it. I remember Rick Gaiman always had a picture of my sister on his desk. He always kept it there, so to keep it reminding him that it's an ongoing case. And the ones I've taken over have been really nice with it. So I do believe they take it seriously still, but it's just, I don't know, to preoccupy other things or what.
There's not enough evidence to arrest him. When we met with the police recently, they said, we know he did it. There's nothing we can do to prove it. There's not enough evidence to arrest him. If we arrest him, he's going to get let go because they just don't have anything.
Rick Gaiman spoke about what this case means to him, even today.
Oh, sure. I worked on this case. This was my only case for about 14 months. I did nothing else but work on this case. And, you know, as time went by and there were no more leads, I worked on it when I had an opportunity. Now, to say that, I mean, at least monthly, I would relook at everything again and you know, make some phone calls and do some things. But yeah, this was the one that got away. She's obviously not coming back. She's dead. And I knew who did it. But I guess we're never going to know who did it in a court of law.
As recent as last year, Tom had Kathleen declared legally deceased.
She was only declared dead last year. The reason he gave us was something about his sister needed paperwork, or she needed to be declared dead to claim something. That was the only reason he went through with it. We had to go to court. We sat there and stared at him while he testified that he had nothing to do with her disappearance.
I think another thing that drove him to declare her dead was we were starting to get more inquisitive. The new police officers being attached to it. I think he was getting worried that we were going to try to get, she had a pension from where she used to work at. And I think he was worried that we were going to try and get her pension or something. Maybe we were going to, I don't know.
It's a decent amount of money. The police showed us the amount and they told us that that's why he's filing. But
so right away he declared her dead, so he made sure that he could get it. It's a pension, yeah.
He actually got remarried very quickly. I can't remember what year they told us he got remarried. Like, he was already dating someone at the time of her disappearance, and I believe that they said that's the same person that he ended up marrying once the law allowed them to be married. They're divorced.
This woman that Tom later married has stated that after several years of marriage, she came to believe that Tom had married her for her money, and she began to fear for her personal safety. She has since divorced him and relocated due to her safety concerns. She has also stated that she believes Tom is responsible for Kathleen's disappearance, and that he had said vague things over the years that caused her to believe that. This new information came up during the Bill Cosby trial, which also took place in Montgomery County at that same time. Kathleen's family believes that her case took a back seat during that high-profile trial, but they remain hopeful that this new information will be explored further. Kathleen's niece truly believes that her uncle had something to do with her aunt's disappearance, but it appears that the case is stuck at a standstill until new evidence is uncovered.
He's a smart guy, and that's how this has been going on for so long. Whatever he did, he knew what he was doing. He knows to keep his mouth shut. I do remember being picked up from school at least once or twice and getting in the van and my grandfather saying, well, they found a body. It might be Aunt Kathy. So we'll let you know. And I was too young to really know what they had found, but just being picked up from school and saying, we found a body, it might be your aunt. It's traumatizing.
Oh, yeah, that was going on. I mean, I would call Rick Gaiman. Gosh, every time we would see in the paper, I'd call him the next day or right away, you know, before he had a chance to get back to me. And he said, we're looking into it and we'll let you know. And he would return. I was the initial detective, Rick Gaiman. He would return a phone call saying, it's not your sister, no. Take him a while to figure that out back then. One of the things you go through, I mean, I really miss my sister. I loved her to death. But there's a part of me that really wants to know what happened to her. I mean, I know you've heard this before. It's just, what happened to her? What did she go through? You know, was she hurt? I mean, or what did she have? You know, what pain did she suffer when all this is going on? And I always wonder about that. You know, I just hope that it wasn't, whatever happened to her wasn't that bad. And that's another thing I deal with all the time.
Towards the end of my conversation with Frank and Kathy, I asked them, at this point, almost 20 years after Kathleen's disappearance, what is more important to them, to find her or to get justice for what happened to her?
Both. I mean, my dad recently put that he's getting a plaque put on my grandparents' gravestone because we have nothing to bury. And we're putting that there and we want to find her. We want to know what happened to her, but we also...
Yeah, reiterate that. I want part of me wants justice for what happened to her. That's got more tense over the years, the more I think about it.
So what happened to Kathleen Moon on December 3rd, 1999? Do you believe her husband that she just left to go visit Robert Linder, or do you suspect Tom is behind her disappearance? Was Kathleen killed over money? Who was driving her car when it was captured on video surveillance exiting the turnpike? Was her car ditched close to Linder's residence to make it look like he was involved? Is it possible that there's someone out there other than the killer who has information that could solve this case? We did attempt to contact Robert Linder. We wanted to see if he had anything to add about Kathleen's disappearance, but we were unable to find current contact information for him. Kathleen has now been missing for 6,954 days, and her family has spent those 6,954 days wondering what happened to her and where she could be. They so desperately want to find Kathleen, but they also would like to see justice. They've watched the person they believe is responsible go on about their life as though nothing ever happened. If you have any information about Kathleen's disappearance, please call the Upper Marion Police Department at 610-265-3232. At the time of her disappearance, Kathleen was 48 years old. She was described as 5'2" tall and weighed about 120 pounds. She had blonde hair and brown eyes.
Sylvia Brown said she was alive in Las Vegas, or Los Angeles, and that she had lost her mind. That's all she had to say. That immediately dismissed that.
The latest district attorney, Kevin Steele, he was the prosecutor in the Bill Cosby case that just came to an end earlier this year. So I'm hoping that some of my associates back there will talk to him about this. I didn't have any involvement with any of that, other than I knew some of the investigators involved in it. But this was a good win for them, and this would be a good one too.
It's hard. I really miss her. I miss talking to her up to this day. She would always, I had a situation, a personal problem going on. She was always, give me the sensible side, what I should do. Miss her personality. I see, Kathy is named after her. And I do see a lot of, the same traits between her and my sister, personality-wise. And it makes me miss my sister more. One thing I feel bad is for my father passed away and never saw this resolved. And I know he took that to his deathbed. I really feel bad about that. So there's times when I look at situations with Kathy and my other daughter, Amy, how much they miss their aunt and how helpful she would have been with some of the things they've gone through over the years. It's a big void, a really big void. You never really get over it. The more you get used to it, but you don't get over it, so.
That brings us to the end of episode 153. I'd like to thank everyone who took the time to speak with us for the show. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and on Instagram as thevanishedpodcast. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. You can also now find the show on Pandora. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. I'll be taking next week off for the holidays, but I'll be back the following week with a case from Virginia. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.